So it's really nice to have you here, Danny Fingerroth, on our podcast. It's a really a pleasure to have the time to discuss it together. First, for the people who might not know who you are, could you introduce yourself a little bit?
My name is Danny Fingerroth. People might know me from the 18 years I spent at Marvel Comics as a writer and editor. I was best known as the editor of Spider-Man Comics, the group editor of Spider-Man Comics, and wrote a lot of Spider-Man, a lot of Iron Man. I wrote a series called Darkhawk, and I actually wrote The Dazzler for quite a while. I've written books. I don't know if they've been translated into French, but Superman on the Couch, What Superheroes Really Tell Us About Ourselves and Our Society, Disguised as Clark Kent, Jews, Comics, and the Creation of the Superhero. And I wrote a biography of Stan Lee in 2019 called A Marvelous Life that I'm pretty sure was translated into French. And my most recent book is called Jack Ruby, The Many Faces of Oswald's Assassin. It's a biography of the guy who in 1963 killed Lee Harvey Oswald, the famous picture of Ruby. You just see Ruby from behind, but you see Oswald, screaming in pain as he's being shot. So that's some of the stuff I've done. What brings me here today is that I am the chair of something called Will Eisner Week, which is an annual celebration the first week in March, because Eisner was born March 6th, I believe, of 1917. But it celebrates the work of Will Eisner, famous for The Spirit in the 1940s and 50s, and then kind of reinventing himself and the comic book field with A Contract with God, which you see behind me, has been translated into many languages, which was among the first things that, at least here in America, we call graphic novels. I think in France and Italy, there were probably many predecessors. But this is, Eisner taking a mature sensibility and bringing it to the comic medium, which he called sequential art. And he didn't invent the term graphic novel, but he probably was the first one to really popularize it widely. And then after A Contract with God, Eisner continued putting out, he lived another 25 years or so and put out another like 25 graphic novels, many of them dealing with a Jewish life in America in the 20th century, so they're very much memoir. But he also inspired many, many people to express the stories and obsessions they had in comic book or graphic novel form. And he lent his name to the Eisner Awards, which are still given out today. They're kind of considered the Academy Awards of comics. So about 15 years ago, Will's heirs came up with the idea for having an annual celebration of Will Eisner's career, of sequential art, of free speech, of graphic novels. And they brought me on because I had been, I'm a historian and critic, and I was literally lecturing about Will Eisner in various venues around the country, and they came to one of my talks, and we met, and so they hired me to help them publicize and spread the word about Will Eisner Week, which had just started about 15 years ago. We are now up to over 100 events worldwide, either in person or on the internet or on radio or podcasts. And so it's events and interviews and panels and discussions and lectures. Many of them are literally about Will Eisner or some aspect of his work, but a lot of them are about graphic novels in general and popular culture, you know, Will was a big advocate of graphic novels, of the medium, of the creators, of it being a unique art form and communication form. And so this Will Eisner Week is, of course, it's about Will, but it's also about the medium that he so loved and cherished and evangelized for, if I may use that term. You know, he kind of wanted to spread the word to people. You know, to this day, and I'm sure you get the same thing, when you say comic book or even graphic novel to people, they immediately only think of the kind of most child-oriented, you know, not there's anything wrong with it, but, you know, they think of whatever, Superman, Batman, or Donald Duck, or Mickey Mouse, or, you know, or Bugs Bunny. They don't, you know, even though this has been happening for close to 50 years, the idea of comic books, of literature told in a comic book format, is like still strikes people as something new and weird. And so one of the many functions of Will Eisner Week is to just spread the word that there is this medium that you really might enjoy and that you might, you know, learn something from, be entertained by, develop a community through. So that is what, and it's called Will Eisner Week, and it's around, Eisner died in 2005. You know, but he had a very productive life and career. And so it's called Will Eisner Week because his birthday, as I say, was March 6th. But, you know, we are very, so if you search out, there might well be an event, especially in Paris, I'm sure there's various events for Will Eisner Week. If you Google them, you can find them. If you go to the Will Eisner website, we list a lot of them there, but not by no means all. But the idea is, say, so next year will again be Will Eisner Week. And if you missed it this year, or if you didn't, maybe in your community, in your school, in your comics club, in your comic shop, in a museum, in a university, online, maybe you could either attend or even initiate your own Will Eisner event. And if you send us the information at willeisner.com, we will publicize it and try to get the word out. And we have posters we can send you to help publicize it. So it's a celebration of comics and the graphic novel with Will Eisner sort of as the catalyst.
And was it hard when you decided to join on board this celebration? Is it hard to create such an event and to try to have an international reach?
Well, it. I guess I should mention, by the way, also that especially during. If you go to willeisner.com and then if you go to the Will Eisner YouTube site, during COVID, we knew that, and even now, I mean, you know, there is, you know, people have gotten used to doing things online, and obviously COVID is still in existence. We did interviews and panels with some very interesting, exciting creators, with the idea being that during those few years, people, if they couldn't get, you know, do an event in person where they were, or for whatever reason, could access some very exciting people, Todd McFarlane and Jerry Kraft and Dan Shkade and Dean Haspiel and Emil Ferris and just lots and lots of very interesting, accomplished people talking about comics and Will Eisner. So that obviously is available all year round. You know, when you say, is it difficult? It could be as simple as if you're a teacher at a college to say to somebody, can we have a room to use just to have a bunch of people get together and talk about Will Eisner or talk about comics? So, I mean, it can be that simple, or it can be a very elaborate orchestrated event where you reach out and try to get local creators to come in. So really, that's very, we don't want to put any impediments in people's way. The idea is not to make it difficult for you. The idea is just the opposite, to kind of encourage people to celebrate various aspects of comics and graphic novels. And if the, you know, and brand it as a Will Eisner Week event as sort of an organizing theme. And of course, if you want to talk about Will and read, you know, Contract with God or one of his other 20 graphic novels or The Spirit, or, you know, we certainly would not, we would certainly be fine if you wanted to literally focus in on Will Eisner. But I think the idea is just, I mean, you know, my joke is it's Will Eisner Week in my house, you know, every week, but, you know, to talk about Will and his accomplishments, the things and his ambitions, the things that everybody agrees he did right, the, you know, the sometimes controversial things that are food for thought involving his work. But the existence of such a thing as Will Eisner Week, we're hoping, and so it seems to have worked, will be a inspiration to people, not a barrier to them to doing an event or a celebration.
Right. You said that Will Eisner basically, and not maybe not voluntarily, invented like the graphic novel. But if I'm not wrong, and correct me if I'm wrong, I also know from interviews that he didn't like the term graphic novel, because to him it was comic books, it was just bande dessinée, and somehow graphic novel, and in France we say roman graphique, has been used like an elevated form of a culture, because people say, you know, I read graphic novels, I don't read comics. And I'm wanting to know what was your position on that? Shouldn't we use just comics in general?
You know, let me my understanding, you know, as the legend goes, you know, Will had done the Contract with God, which is really four shorter works combined, and he was, you know, this was around the mid to late 1970s, and certainly in America we didn't have the tradition of the graphic album the way you have in Europe, and Will was trying to pitch this collection of comic format stories to a publisher, and he knew if he used the word if he said it's comics, the guy would go, well, you know thanks but no thanks, there's no market for that, I'm not into, you know. So Will called it a graphic novel. Now, you know, and he never claimed to, I mean, I don't know. The story is that it sort of came into his head, but he'd been in correspondence with a guy named Jack Katz, who did something called The First Kingdom. And Katz had used the term graphic novel in his correspondence with Eisner. So whether Eisner literally, you know, was remembering Katz, or whether just it was buried in his subconscious. So that's where Will first used the term. He never claimed that he invented the graphic novel. I mean, that, you know, but that for reporters, no offense, and you know, and just as a quick summation, over the years people would say Will Eisner invented the graphic novel, although he certainly never claimed to have done that. Did he like the term or not? I never heard that he didn't. I mean, I his preferred term was sequential art. You know, what would that be in French?
Art séquentiel.
That exactly. So I think he generally liked the term sequential art, but I'd never heard that he actually had anything against the term graphic novel.
Maybe it's just something that I'm extra thinking, overthinking, because right. We have this discussion today because, like you said, the Will Eisner Week is also just to promote comic books as an art form, as a form of literature. And we still, even though comics exist for now decades and decades, we are still in certain public discourses seeing comics or sequential art as a lesser form of literature, which is really a which I don't know why a lot of people are still thinking
right. And that's why I think that's why Will and other people tried to come up with other terms for it. I think Art Spiegelman famously said that a graphic novel is a comic book that you need a bookmark for.
Maybe I was just mixing up with art.
But I mean, I don't think, I don't know whether Spiegelman likes the term or not, but it's, but you're right. It's partly a marketing term. So bookstores and libraries can now have a section called graphic novel. I mean, graphic novels makes no real sense any more than comic book makes sense. They're not comic books, certainly traditional pamphlet kind of, they're not literally books, and they're, many of them are not comical. They're not, and yet they're called comic, So graphic novel, the problem in America, at least, is for many years, I think the word graphic was associated with pornography. So I think even though it was an attempt, to elevate the comic book into the graphic novel, I think there are still some people who hear that and go, "Oh, you mean it's porn?" It's like, well, no. Then again, there are some that have erotic elements, so you can't, So it's just one of those terms. I think it's a lot of terms we use every day in both English and French and every other language that if you think about and analyze literally what they mean, they kind of don't have a lot of meaning, but it's become, a foot in the door for respectability, for sequential art or, God forbid, comic books.
And what do you think about the evolution of comic books in America as a medium? Because you've been editing and publishing them. Now you're writing about them. I don't know if you're still reading what's being put out by Marvel, DC, or Image Comics, any indie publishers.
I dipped my toe in the Marvel and DC stuff. Look, I think we are in an extraordinary age of comic books for every age group and every demographic group. I mean, it's really, I'll hear people sometimes say, comics are dying or,
Weren't they saying already that in the 90s or in the 80s?
The 90s, they were saying it in the 40s or the 50s. Certainly it's the 50s because the 50s they had the congressional hearings and Dr. Wortham and a lot of different people wanting to protect children from horror comics and crime comics. But look, it's words, as Harvey Pekar said, it's words and pictures together. You can do anything with words and pictures, just like movies, just like the theater. So it is amazing to me. When I was a kid, comic books, at least in America, were understood to be for children. And then we did different genres. It wasn't all superheroes, but it was understood that it was action adventure or really a very unsubtle humor, sometimes done very skillfully, but for children or for, non-intelligent adults. So I think, yes, I think the traditional superhero market is facing a lot of challenges. People who want that sort of story can get it now in the movies and TV where they couldn't years ago. The idea that special effects would catch up, and that to the, to a lot of the stuff that before that could only be accomplished through the imagination is just amazing. But if you go into a comic shop, if you go into a bookstore, I mean, so manga is enormous. Manga is astonishingly popular. And then comics for actual children. For a long time, comics, it almost seemed like comics were abandoning the child audience. And, you know, whereas comics used to only be for children, at a certain point, you couldn't find any comics that were aimed at. Now, through Scholastic and other publishers, there are, the works of Raina Telgemeier and Dov Pilkey. I mean, there are generations of now of sequential art literate children and young people that had skipped some generations. There were a few generations of people who probably would have liked comics, but just didn't have anywhere to get them and didn't like superheroes or didn't have a comic shop near them, or their parents thought they were trash or something. So I think we are really in a golden age. Plus, you know, with the internet and digital comics, comics have always been very democratic in the sense that all you needed was a pencil and a piece of paper, right? I mean, you know, if you wanted to put out a comic book and get it photocopied and staple it and hand it out on a street corner or sell it, to your class, you know, there was a way that comics were democratic, that movies weren't, that TV was. I mean, that's changed now, of course, with digital tools. But I mean, the number and variety and of really exciting, wonderful, inspired comics about all sorts of topics, it's really, I don't think 50 years ago, nobody could have imagined it. So, you know, it's, you know, but people, what, you know, what people will want, what kids will want, what adults will want in their comics or in their movies or TV is always changing. And so if you were reading superhero comics in their, you know, in the big boom era of the late 80s, early 90s, then I think Marvel and DC are still, if you want, I mean, that's kind of almost, this weird inversion. I mean, there probably are 10 Batman comics a month and 10 Spider-Man comics a month. You know, it's the smaller, the lesser known hero. But I mean, there's plenty of Marvel and DC are putting out plenty of stuff, both new and repackaged in these enormous omnibus. I don't know
omnibus. Yeah.
So yeah, no, I it's an astonishingly diverse and creative time in comics.
But I would think that If there is publishers are putting out comic books, and there's like you said, a huge popularity of manga and also young comics for young kids. But still, you have this Will Eisner Week, because we still have to promote comic books as an art form, because it's not maybe the mainstream art form that is, let's say, a bad word, consumed by people in general.
You know, that is definitely true. You know, I used to compare comics to opera. You know, I'd say to people, or poetry, where, you know, there are millions of people who love opera and who love poetry, but not as many as who go to see a Star Wars movie or something, you know. So I think in some way comics are probably still in the position of opera, you know, where millions of people know it and love it. But you're right. I mean, there are, you know, I still have relatives who are very intelligent and very, you know, generally aware culturally, and yet who still don't quite get what, you know, they still have an image of comics of what they were like in the 1950s and 60s, you know, and the idea that, say, Mouse won a Pulitzer Prize, or that there are these things called the Eisner Awards, or that, comics are the fuel behind so much popular media aside from superheroes, you know, not even counting the superhero movies. You know, I think there's just a lot of culturally omnivorous and intelligent and open-minded people who still, don't get that comics can be more than superheroes or Mickey Mouse.
What are you personally doing in this Will Eisner Week? So you're not just referencing all the events that are going online or IRL. Are you also like doing lectures somewhere?
Eisner was very Jewish identified, and he was very concerned with anti-Semitism, which is always relevant. And the last graphic novel he did, just before he died, he finished it, was called The Plot, the secret history of the Protocols of the Elders of Zion. Protocols of the Elders of Zion was this fraudulent, invented document, that purported to contain the Jewish plan for world domination. And it is like this cancer on the world that has existed, and it was basically transposed from a document that wasn't even about anything Jewish at all. That was I don't even remember. So it goes back to some wars and rivalries in Central Europe from hundreds of years ago. So Eisner wrote a graphic novel, doing his best to debunk the protocols. A guy named Nicholas Meyer, who you may know as the director of Star Trek, writer and director of Star Trek movies, author of Sherlock Holmes novels, including The 7% Solution. He wrote a Sherlock Holmes book in 2019 called The Adventure of the Peculiar Protocols, which is about Sherlock Holmes coming up against the protocols of the Elders of Zion. And in the book, he gives a special thanks to Will Eisner's The Plot for having helped him in research and in thinking about the protocols. So I saw that and I was able to get in touch with him. And I said, I'd love to do an interview with you about how Eisner influenced your book and your thinking and about your career in general. And he was kind enough to say he'd be willing to do it. So I will be doing an online interview with him on Tuesday, March 5th at 6 o'clock East Coast America time. I don't know what that would be in your time, but I can send you a link to it. It'll be through a guy named Ben Catchor, who is a wonderful cartoonist and teacher himself. It's through his what's called the New York Comics and Picture Story Symposium, which is a wonderful weekly thing that he does in person, and a lot of it is online. So I can send you a link to that. So I'll be interviewing Nick Meyer for Will Eisner Week. In the past, I've done all sorts of panels. When he was Al Jaffe, the Mad Magazine guy who just passed away a year ago. Al actually had worked in Eisner's studio at the beginning of his career. And so I've done events with him. I've done events with all manner of people, but this is definitely reaching out beyond, you know, even the world of cartoonists and academics into the movie and TV world, which, it's interesting. And it's a tribute to Will, really, that Nick Meyer, if you look him up, Nicholas Meyer, his resume is astonishing. You know, starting with the 7% solution, going through a movie he directed called The Day After, that was like one of the biggest events of the 80s, a movie about what happens during a nuclear war. It was a TV movie, but it was very, I mean, this is, you know, an unbelievable resume or CV that this guy has, and that he, you know, he could easily, even if he want, you know, I mean, he could easily just have put a footnote to Eisner or just put him, whatever. You know, the fact that he made a special point of thanking and acknowledging Will Eisner for helping him think about this book is, I think, a tribute to what a classy guy Nicholas Meyer is, but also a tribute to Will Eisner's influence and the power of comics to go above and beyond what a lot of people are stuck thinking about them as. So that's what I'm doing myself this year for Will Eisner Week. I'm talking to you for Will Eisner Week.
Yeah, that's right. That's also what because you're trying to find new ways of promoting Will Eisner's legacy and comic books. So each year you have to try to, I don't know, reinvent yourself or just try to do something new and different so that you don't get bored also of doing this.
Well, you know, I've been through the upheavals of the comic book industry, and I learned a lot of skills there, you know, that enabled me to, you know, at least attempt to tackle topics and media, mediums, whatever the plural is, that are not just strictly comics, but sort of grow out of it. I've even been, you know, so I've got these books about comics and pop culture. The Stan Lee biography, the Jack Ruby book is really my first attempt to do something that is, you know,
quite different.
You know, I mean, I've written a number, you know, half dozen prose books, but to write about somebody who's not a figure in the comic book world, although there are comic book connections, including that Jack Kirby drew a Jack Ruby comic for Esquire magazine in 1967, oddly enough.
We always go away. We always find a way to comics.
So being who I am, there's a lot of comic connect, and I'm starting. You know, I've been since I was a teenager. I've been obsessed with the works of Bob Dylan, and so I've recently been kind of dipping my toe in Bob Dylan studies, which has connections to both Kennedy assassination research and to comic. I mean, it all kind of ties, you know, and to sort of tales of interesting American Jewish people that I find sort of fascinating and interesting and worth exploring. So yeah, I'm keeping busy, and I'm trying to, you know, diversify. I'm working on a new book that will be a whole other thing that I can't talk about yet, but if it gets picked up by a publisher, it'll people will look at it and go, well, this is both a departure and yet totally consistent with what Danny has done over the years, you know. So I will leave you with that tantalizing
that's some teasing you got. And I had another question, because if I just do my research on your Wikipedia page, it said that you started in 1976 as an assistant to Larry Lieber. So that means that you were a contemporary of the publishing of A Contract with God.
That I was what?
A contemporary. You witnessed the publication in real time of A Contract with God. Okay. And I wanted to know if you had read it when it was out, the year it came out, and if you knew at that time, if you can remember, if you knew at that time that it would be a game changing book for the comic books field.
It's funny. I appreciate Wikipedia is halfway correct, which I guess is
like, damn.
No. Wikipedia says that I started working for Larry Lieber at a different company, not at Marvel, a company called Atlas Seaboard. I did not. I never worked. Atlas Seaboard was a company that the founder of Marvel, after he sold Marvel, started it for various reasons. You can look it up. But and Larry was his cousin, just like Stan Lee was Martin Goodman's cousin. and Larry is Stan Lee's brother. So I did start working for Larry Lieber, but it was at Marvel. After Atlas Seaboard Comics had stopped publishing, Larry came back to Marvel and was running something called the British Department, which was comics we put out for publication in England, mostly reprints, but also Captain Britain. Some of your listeners and viewers may know that character. And, you know, you're right. The year around a little after I started working in comics professionally, Contract with God came out. I was a big Will Eisner fan even then, because in Jules Feiffer's 1965, the comic book, The Great Comic Book Heroes, if you know that book, he Feiffer had started out. Feiffer, of course, is the screenwriter and cartoonist and graphic novelist and children's book author and everything else, who's still working and still kicking. Very much, very active. I just spoke to him the other day. You know, that's an incredible career too. I recommend his trilogy of graphic novels, starting with something called Kill Your Mother, came out about 4 or 5 years ago. If you're an Eisner fan, it's a big, especially the third volume, the ghost scripter, the ghost writer, the ghost script, it's called. A lot of Eisner in there. Anyway, so I was a big Eisner fan, starting with The Great Comic Book Heroes, then with all the reprints by Warren Publishing and Kitchen Sink Publishing. And, you know, when Eisner really came back to comics, he'd been doing comics for the military and for corporate work, but he hadn't done any real narrative, you know, adventure or graphic novel type comic. Anyway, so yes, I have a first edition. I was very excited. It was kind of mind-blowing, if I may lapse into cliche, because, you know, Eisner had been visible if you knew where to look over the years, but if you didn't, it was just suddenly Will Eisner comes back, and here is this, his attempt to really be the Saul Bellow or the Bernard Malamud or the Philip Roth of comics, and it was such a departure, and so... you know, you could see it was the same guy. So yeah, I was very kind of surprised, inspired. You know, that was really an early, we had the underground comics, right? I mean, I'm from the generation. So certainly we knew, you know, and Harvey Pekar, I was a big Harvey Pekar fan, American Splendor fan. So we knew, right? The people who loved comics knew that comics could be anything that a creator wanted it to be. But here was Will Eisner, who had, you know, who had made himself legendary in the 40s and 50s, then kind of, you know, disappears in a way. And then he comes back with this astonishing form and content. You know, it really, I think it opened everybody's eyes, you know, even more. Okay, the undergrounds show this potential. The comics, a lot of the undergrounds were kind of juvenile or just sort of taboo shattering for the sake of breaking taboos. You know, not all of it, but, you know, a lot. That's what it was famous for. And then suddenly here's this, you know, this middle-aged guy, this 50-something guy who... just for the sheer love of the medium, because he was pretty well set business-wise. You know, he didn't, and he really, in doing his first graphic novel, it was a pretty much a money-losing proposition. Here's this guy who comes up with this. Oh, look at that. You can do anything with comics, and you could even be someone who's been doing it for 40 years and still, you know, find a way to express yourself and your feelings and your life. So yeah, that was very exciting. I think what we didn't know, and it took a while. It took a while before the idea caught on, right? I mean, I don't know if this is true in France, because I said, I know in France generally we're more sophisticated about graphic albums and graphic novels. But in America, they didn't know where to put anything like a Contract with God. So they put it in the humor section, you know? because that's where the Charlie Brown peanut stuff was and stuff like that. So I think everybody was inspired and impressed. You know, even people who didn't like it, I think realized it was a big step forward. But I don't know. It took several years. You had to have Art Spiegelman and Francois Mouly's Raw magazine, where Mouse first appeared in chapter. I mean, it took a lot of evolution to get to the world of the graphic novel that we have today. And I don't know if many people or anybody, including Eisner, saw that happening in that way, you know. And of course, because he kept putting out new graphic novels on a regular basis, he helped make it happen. But yeah, I think that was something that nobody really could have predicted.
And how do you feel about the, let's call it, the Will Eisner's legacy on the industry today? I think it's quite obvious to state that Will Eisner has left a mark on everybody who's doing comic books today. There would be no such an industry or an art market if not for Will Eisner? Or is maybe a... Not. I'm not wanting to like to deify to make Will Eisner a god, but I guess he has still a very big importance on the field.
Well, look, I mean, this is, in a way, and I got to wrap it up after this. But I was at Marvel Comics from the 70s through the 90s.
Yeah,
and Marvel started a line of graphic novels. Now, some of them, a lot of them were just long,
stories.
Some of them just long, severe stories done by very talented people. So they were very well done, but they were essentially, but even Marvel, with the Epic line and Epic Comics was taking, baby steps outside of superhero genre. But we call them graphic novels because somebody thought, this is a term that will lend us gravitas, that will give us extra credibility. So just the fact that Will took that term that he never claimed to have invented, but was enabled to, that he took that term and made it into something that meant a next level in comics. But, so that's just, and so that at Marvel, people in the marketing went, let's call these graphic novels. That's the smallest piece of his of his influence. But yes, I don't think anything that takes a personal or quirky or individual or even a identity, religious, ethnic, racial, any kind of identity we'll open those doors that could all happen. We could have the world now. Would it have happened eventually? Probably. There's probably enough people who love comics, but that somebody with the who had the reputation for quality that Will Eisner had, for him to be one of the first people opening those doors, and then to keep them open and to lend his name to the awards and keep spreading the word and evangelizing. Yeah, I think comics will be forever influenced by Will Eisner.
All right. Thank you. Thanks a lot for this.
Thank
this
you.
Is a really great discussion, Denny. It was a pleasure.
Thank you. And I hope we meet in real life. And
come to France.
Happy Will Eisner Week, everybody. Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.